This is the Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency with information for IT professionals. For more information, advertising opportunities, and to download other shows, visit ciops.podbean.com. This is episode 30 with Kirsten Rashfal and is brought to you by the Computer Information Agency. Visit us on the web at www.ciops.com. Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency. My name is Robert Crane, and in this episode, I'm joined by Kirsten Rashfal, all the way from Germany. Kirsten, guten Abend.
Yeah. Hi. Guten Abend. Nein, it's morning in Bars.
Okay. Well, it's Abend over here at the moment. So.
Okay.
It's wonderful to be able to speak to you all the way across the wonders of the internet. So. What we'll do, as we always do here on the podcast, is go to our guest and get them to introduce themselves, let them know who you are, your experience. If you could give us a bit of background, that'd be great.
Yeah, okay. I love this. Hi to all your listeners. My name is Kirsten Rashfal, and like you say, I'm from Germany. I have my own IT company since 1991. I started first in my business career as a controller and have a lot to do with IT. And later I fell in love with IT. And my husband is also in this company. We do this together. And yes, our customers are small and medium-sized businesses. And when we heard about Office 365, in this time BPOS, at the first look said this is very interesting for a lot of people who are not able to have their own IT infrastructure and have no people in their business, in the company who knows the IT. So we started 2009 with BPOS. And this year came for me very surprisingly the award, the MVP. I become MVP. I think you become MVP in January too. Is this right?
That is correct. Yes. So we're both MVP. So I mean, we've had a couple of other Office 365 MVPs on, like Brent Hill and also Lauren Strant. So we're working our way slowly through everybody.
Ah, okay. Yes, and we are one of the top 10 partners in Germany for Office 365. And we have more than 220 customers since these early days. And yes, and this is my introduction of me.
That's great. I think it's good to obviously for people to understand that there are people obviously very involved in Office 365 all around the world. Obviously it's a common product, but I suppose what would be of interest to get started is how are you finding the Office 365 market over there in Germany? Is the take up good? Is it something that is being accepted as positive, or businesses seeing it, we don't want to upgrade, or we don't trust the cloud? I mean, what's the general feeling of the businesses you're working with when it comes to Office 365?
Mm-hmm. The German customers see the opportunity, but the German market has two difficulties. The first is that Germans are very slow in changing and adapting new innovation software. They want to have steady, they want to invest and be sure that this investation is right and that it works. The second is the laws. German people are looking very, very strict at the laws, and we have strict laws because of the personal information. And this is also not only a German problem. We are in the European Union, and we have to look at these laws too. And this has made a lot of difficulties for the German market to start in the cloud.
So are the laws over there something that the small businesses know about? Is that what they're telling you? They're worried about the privacy and those sort of things? They're actually coming to you saying that?
Yes, that's right. We have also always a discussion, and that's really funny because they use Facebook. They use other social media. They have often Google Mail, and these are all internet services where, okay, Facebook not, but Google says clear that they want to use your data. And they say it to you. If I send an email to someone who has a Google email, I must accept that, look at the content of my email, not to analyze me, but to analyze what is interesting in this conversation. And that's funny. That's the people, this user people. But if you talk about business information, then they are more sensible because, again, we have really strict laws about the private and the personal information of your, I don't know, co-workers or how
co-workers, that's fine.
Co-workers, yes. If you are a business, if you are running a business and you have people in your company, they are co-workers?
That's correct.
Okay. Then you have as a company owner, you have a special responsibility for this data. And But this is a discussion. A lot of people do in the internet, and they try to how you can call it. Perhaps you have a competition market. There are the hostels in Germany, and the hostels want to hold their market. And they start the discussion and say, is it not allowed to have your business data out of Germany? And then they push this in the public discussion. And we have to correct this every time because the German laws are so, it's not where the business data is, it is how you handle them. And there are nearly no German hoster who is as good in this as Microsoft. That's a fact.
Yeah, I think that, again, we see a lot of the same sort of security concerns coming out of most places, but out of Australia. I believe that the Office 365 data centers in Europe are in Ireland. Is that correct?
Yes, in Dublin and in Amsterdam, in Ireland and in the Netherlands.
So, both.
And I thought first it was data center is in Dublin, but I have heard no, it's in Amsterdam, it's Netherlands.
Okay, so for us here in Australia, the primary data center is in Singapore, and the secondary data center, the failover data center, is in Hong Kong. So we do have similar concerns by customers who, concerned that their data does reside, outside Australia, but again, it's a matter of correcting, making sure the field is level, because as you mentioned, so many people basically use email. They send private documents. They send, restricted information in email, and they're not perhaps aware that email is sent in, plain text.
Yes.
It's not encrypted.
Yes.
There's no guarantee of delivery, so they're using this to send this information, and they're worried about. Mm. Storing it in a data center that's controlled, looked after by Microsoft and has lots of people there 24 hours a day monitoring it. And at the end of the day, it's not in Microsoft's interest to, do anything, that isn't going to make sure that data is 100% secure. So you're right. There are still a lot of businesses and competitors out there who are spreading, making it the thing a bit difficult for customers to understand. But I think that going forward that, Microsoft's position in the market and its leadership is going to end up, being sort of like the standard, one of the higher standards that people will come to accept. So I think over time we'll see less of this being an issue. But, yes, we definitely see the same sort of thing out here.
Mm. And Microsoft in the European Union, Microsoft is the only company who fulfill in the moment the European Union clauses. So from the law, they are okay. They are all right.
And again, I think that they're working very hard to make sure that they come up to the standards, the highest standards if possible, because this is a big direction for them to move. And again, they do are moving more and more customers and moving their data into their data centers. So they do need to take on board all these data protection and privacy laws for all the different countries. And in all honesty, when you think about it, it's very difficult to do. I mean, you think about Microsoft having to, you know, conform to different laws in Europe, different laws in the US, different laws in Australia. It's a big job. So, and I think, you know, they're doing it quite admirably. It may not be as quick enough for everybody, but I think that, you know, they're all moving in the right direction. And I think that's the most positive thing.
Yeah, but at what time is politics fast?
That's true. Yeah, politics is never quick. But again, Microsoft again has to operate, you know, in multiple markets around the world, and it has to conform to the laws. So if the European Union do change their data privacy law, then you know it's the onus is on Microsoft that they have to maybe change their services to accommodate that. So again, many people may not realise that. You know, there's a big investment from people like Microsoft to make sure that they do conform to all these sort of laws. So I think that's a very positive thing. All right. So, I mean, apart from that, what are the positive aspects of Office 365 you're seeing? I mean, what are the customers that are being converted, that are jumping on board, what's their major reason? Why do they want to go to Office 365 in your experience?
The first customer, which are really, really happy, are the small customer who have used in former time the small business server. Because with this IT infrastructure they get from Office 365, it's much bigger. It can much more than the small business services, the small business server has offered.
Yeah. So I think again, the important clarification there is that Office 365, the products that are available, SharePoint, Exchange, and Link, are all the enterprise versions. So
that's right.
You know, a full copy of SharePoint Server 2010 on site is a very expensive product that most small businesses won't have the funds, the resources to use. But they can certainly use all the functions and the features, and I think once they start using it, they do see the benefit of it. So again, we get a similar thing out here. So again, you know, that's one of the big selling points as well, is the enterprise features.
Yes, of course, and also that they haven't a lot of people. We got all these people we have. I think from 220. I don't know the exact number, but there are only I think 5 or 6 which were customer from us before this time, and the other are all new customer for us. All new, and they coming to us, and they say they have problems, a lot of problems to administrate Exchange, and this is also a big point for them, because they say I nearly spend a week in the month only for IT, and I don't want to do it. I want to do my business, and I don't want to administrate Exchange or SharePoint. They don't know. SharePoint is normally for this customer really new, but they have heard of it and they want to use it, and they want to use it because they can share information without having the people from outside in their own environment, because this is also a big problem for the people. You said they can send with the email documents, yes, but a lot of people have to collaborate, to work together, and they don't know how they open their own IT infrastructure in a safe way for others outside. This is really, from the IT, technical IT aspect, not an easy theme.
No, and I think you're right, and I think, again, just one of the security aspects that people do dwell on is they sit there and they say, well, you know, I'm concerned about, I don't want to have my data stored on the cloud. Well, you know, the bottom line is if you have a server or a workstation or a mobile device that is connected to the internet, you're on the cloud. is potential that somebody else could come into your small business server or to your home PC, and they could basically, you know, potentially get access to your information if you haven't secured it. And, you know, we all know that it's not easy necessarily to keep every machine up to date with all the patches, not only from Microsoft, but also from other people. So again, there is that, you know, security issue, and it is makes a lot of sense to basically move that sort of overhead and that worry into Microsoft, who, again, are typically the ones that write the products, make the products, and will probably know them better than anybody else. So it doesn't mean that they won't be necessarily, you know, that it's not impossible for them to have a security issue, but the likelihood is obviously much less. But I think that you're right. I think that the majority of people who are using IT simply want to do their job. They spend a lot of their time, like you said, maintaining servers, putting on patches, doing updates, doing all the things that aren't their job. They're not an IT company. And unfortunately, like I said, a lot of their systems aren't installed, you know, perhaps in the most optimal way. And yes, they're going to get problems. They're going to get struggles. And then if they have been done correctly, then when a new version comes out and they want to upgrade to get the features, they're going to have to go through all this pain and buy licensing and migrate. Yeah. Whereas, again, you know, Office 365 is generally going to be much easier because the migration is going to be done by Microsoft and you will always have, you know, the access to the latest version. So it makes a lot of sense for all businesses, but especially small businesses who just want to get on with their job.
Yeah. And that's a funny aspect too. One point which are important for our new customers is then security. You first discuss about security, and then they notice, oh, I get a lot of more security if I go in the cloud to Microsoft. And I have another aspect they can cover, it's archive. Because the tax law in our country is very, very hard and strict. it's funny. I have a discussion with a chief security officer from Microsoft, and we talk about where they get where the law comes to Microsoft to want data, and it's not the USA, where all the German companies are afraid because of the Patriot Act that the USA want all their data. No, it's the German tax law who sent the most
request for the data.
Yes, that's right, to Microsoft that they want to see the data. Yes, that's really a funny aspect. Yeah, it's really interesting. And so and this is a nice point for the small business too, because Microsoft is a big concern, and when the tax law comes to them, then they have their own
processes.
Lawyers. And this is that they are famous lawyers. They are not a small lawyer, and they handle them this questions, this request. They handle this for the customer in the first step.
Exactly, and I think an analogy we would have in Australia is again, we have a, you know, a tax department here that that a small business, you know, has to keep records for around 7 years, and, you know, six and a half years down the track, if the tax department says, oh, we need to see the record for this deduction or this expense, you need to produce it. So again, the advantage with the Office 365, for example, is that one of the plans for the email option typically allows you to have effectively an unlimited email box. So not that you want to promote people having big emails, but the reality is most businesses do keep their stuff in email, and it makes it, you know, much easier for them when they don't have to worry about running out of space on their email server.
Yes.
And again, because it's an enterprise level product, they're also getting the advantage of things like legal hold. So a business can put a mailbox on legal hold, which means that no matter what the end user does with their emails or the information, the business owner, the administrator, can still get to those records and audit them. So again, enterprise features that they could never pay for before, But now they can get them for a few dollars a month. And again, you know, just because they're a small business doesn't mean that they can't take advantage of these sort of functions. So again, I think this is one of the big things we'll see going forward is you know, these functions and features, you know, really going to make a big difference to a lot of small businesses.
Oh, now you can help me because I had a lot of trouble to translate legal hold. So legal hold is that the data is storage and that you can change it. Does this a legal hold function also means that you can put on rules?
Yeah, I think that my understanding of legal hold is basically what happens is you nominate a mailbox to be put on legal hold. What that means is that all the transactions, all the information that is in that mailbox then is basically kept, imagine like a backup, that the administrator can access and search and get to. So, for example, what typically happens in maybe some companies is that when an employee thinks of leaving a business, they go into their emails and they delete every email, every contact, so there's nothing left in. What legal hold allows you to do is basically automatically archive the mailbox on a constant basis so that when the no matter what the employee does, even if they delete an email, a copy is still kept that the administrator can get access to. So again, it's my understanding is that in the US typically they have you know, financial acts and Sarbanes-Oxley that requires them to keep a constant audit trail and, you know, basically there to prevent the deletion of, you know, important information. So again, you can put a mailbox on legal hold and that basically preserves the data no matter what the end user does.
But can you put it on legal hold without the archive, the archive function?
The legal hold functionality is only available on the Exchange Plan 2 is my understanding. So you need an E3 or an E4 license to do that. But once you have that, you have the ability then to nominate that the mailbox is on legal hold. By default, it's not, but you can nominate the mailbox to be on legal hold if you want.
Okay. And when we discuss this, one other question, because you say a scenario where we have a coworker and he leaves the company, then you have put the box, email box on legal hold. But then when the coworkers leave, you would normally don't use his mailbox anymore. So what happens if you put them on legal hold? Can you take them inside your other mailbox, for example?
My understanding is that basically what it gives you is that it gives the administrator the access to be able to go into an area within Exchange and basically view the information that was part of that mailbox. So again, it's like a secondary storage area, like a backup storage area. It's not actually in the mailbox, I believe, is my understanding.
Okay.
Never really had to use it. But again, think of it like, you know, sort of another backup. So you still can set up a rule and you can be doing journaling and archiving. But the legal hold, again, preserves all the interactions between them automatically for you in a separate area that, again, typically I believe you could give access to an auditor. So, you know, maybe you've got to do legal discovery or you've got to, you know, let lawyers look at it. You can give them a login to a specific area and then they can go through the emails that were part of that mailbox without necessarily having to be in the mailbox.
And you don't have to have, in this case, a license.
I'm not sure how exactly it works. I believe the administrator, it puts it in administrator's, an exchange administrator can be given access to it. So I'm not sure if that consumes a license, I believe that, you know, an administrator can get access to it. But I wouldn't think it requires a license if you're just looking at the mail, just looking at the archive, just looking at the backup of what's in there.
Yes, because we have done this before. The administration, the delegated administration.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know this. You have this in Australia too.
Yep, we can do those sort of things. Yep.
Yes, you can do. Yeah, and Germany is only special partners who can do this. You must be on a special partner level to have this possibility. And before we could use this, we normally have an administrator in our customer account. And then we took give them the administration right by took all the license away from him, and you can perfectly do all the administration work without having a license then.
Yeah. So again, one of the misconceptions around Office 365 is that you can have as many administrator logins to Office 365.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need to have a license. You only basically need to assign a license if they plan to use a mailbox, have access to SharePoint, run a link license. So again, you can set up an administration login for the client. You can set up an administration login for the partner. They don't consume a license per se. And again, it does make the administration of those mailboxes, tenant much easier.
Yeah, it's really a smart solution.
Exactly, mm-hmm. And I think it's obviously, designed in such a way to give it the most flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
And Microsoft, again, understands the fact that, there could be multiple people maintaining these systems, and again, set up correctly, it does give you that, that flexibility. So,
yeah, that's right.
So I'm just looking here on what it says about legal hold or litigation hold. And mm-hmm. for example, it says, what happens when a mailbox is on litigation hold? It says here that when a user deletes a message from the deleted items or folder using Shift Delete to permanently delete the mailbox item, the deleted items are copied to a hidden folder in the user's mailbox. This folder is called Recoverable Items and is known as the dumpster. Permanently mm-hmm. deleted items are copied to a subfolder called deletions in the recoverable items folder. So they're retained here. The recoverable items are retained for 14 days by default. And when a mailbox is put on litigation hold, the recoverable items folder isn't purged and the items are retained indefinitely. So again, it doesn't affect the user's day-to-day workload. Basically what it does is retains those deletions that a user may do, and especially for the object of maintaining an audit. So, again, if you just go on to the favourite search engine, and for example, the document I'm looking at here is called Put a Mailbox on Litigation Hold. Again, it will give you all the specific information, but importantly to remember that the litigation hold is only available for the enterprise licences, the e-licences,
yes.
And only the advanced licenses, the E3s and the E4s. So, again, one of those features that will be, I think, more and more utilized as we go down the track.
Yeah, of course.
So probably, the way we're seeing it, and I agree with you, is that emails are fairly standard. There's not a lot of value you can add around the email product. Most of the additional value can be added to things like SharePoint and Link, especially to SharePoint, which you mentioned. I think I agree with you that the majority of clients have never seen SharePoint, don't necessarily understand what it is.
Yeah.
How do you go about explaining what SharePoint is and what it can do to customers? How do you get them to understand the power of the products?
That's the biggest challenge we have. We do a lot of video training, which are without cost. It's for free. So video training is for free. You can find it on our blogs in German only. And this helps a lot for the people, help them to understand. They know that they can use SharePoint, but they only see SharePoint in the case of Dropbox.
Yeah. Yep.
It's that's what they see. They think, okay, it's like SkyDrive or Dropbox, and this is the only point they see from SharePoint. And SharePoint is one of the products I love. I really love. But I have started with it 2003, but I never have the time because I am mother. I have two children, and in this time my children were very small. I never have the time to get a deep dive in SharePoint. I use it out of the box. And this is what I show the people, what we can do out of the box. And with the change from SharePoint 2007 to SharePoint 2010, we have a lot of more possibilities because the look and feel, the user interface, has become more comfortable. It looks nearly like an office product. And what we really love is the connection between SharePoint and Office. It's amazing, and Microsoft do a lot of things, and it's really funny because I do a lot of videos, and every time I make a video and use, for example, the web apps, I notice, hopla, there are new things. Yes, and that's really one of the big impact too, that you get all the functionality. And I think the points I show the people with SharePoint is that they can work together, that they can share information, that they get the contacts inside of this. But there's a point I don't like. Because you cannot use the SharePoint contacts in your mobile devices. This is the only thing I don't like. You can put them in the Outlook, but you cannot use it on mobile.
Yeah, my understanding is that most mobile situations will only sync the primary calendar. And obviously when you add a SharePoint calendar, it becomes a secondary, third, ancillary calendar. And unfortunately, that generally doesn't seem to link in with the mobile devices. However, obviously, you know, if we're talking Windows Phone 7, that's obviously got better integration. Just on a quick side note, what's the device market like in Germany? Is it, you know, are iPads and iPhones as big, or is it Android more coming up? I mean, what's the, you know, what is the device of choice over there?
iPad, iPhone. iPad, iPhone have is really, really, yeah, it's really in the market. I think 80% of the people use this. And then we have a new starter. It's because of the Samsung devices. The Samsung devices are really, really good, and they used Android. And this is the next big player. And I think Windows Phone 7 is not so good for the market. I like this phone. We have used it, but I must say I don't like smartphones in former times because I'm always available with this. And then my husband, he's really a freak for devices. And he uses the first iPhone, and he needs the second. And then I get his first iPhone. That's normal the way we do it. He took the new devices. I get the old ones.
the hand-me-downs.
Yeah, genau. Yes, and the iPhone was the first phone I really love, and it was for me easy to use, and I can connect to my complete Microsoft world with Outlook, and I think
you're right. I think that it's one of those interesting markets that you see so many such a big growth in. I think there is a lot of choice. It's good to have obviously, you know, a market leader, but I also see that it's good to have a lot of choice with Android.
Yes.
I think the Windows Phone devices still have a lot of opportunity in the market. They have a lot of hard work to come back. But again, I don't think necessarily there's a large disadvantage with any of the three. I think they're all very similar.
No.
They all connect well to Office 365. They all have apps that will connect to SharePoint and download documents.
Yeah.
They're probably not, you know, as nice and as integrated as you would like. But again, I think there's enough positive there to see the fact that, you know, this is probably going to be the preferred option for a lot of people. You know, they don't need big desktops all the time.
No.
They don't need their laptops all the time. They can do the majority of their work. And I think that, you know, that's basically where a lot of the technology is heading. And I think the other thing with that is it's also these devices are simple. You know, consumers want things that are simple. PCs generally, Macs and PCs, have become quite complex, you know, upgrading and patching and, you know, clicking this and upgrading. You know, it's a lot of work. Whereas an iPhone or an iPad are very simple devices. You know, they don't really do a lot, but that's what makes them very appealing to a lot of people, because a lot of people don't need all these features, I believe.
Now, in this case, Apple do a fine job because they have the hardware and the software. And if you have an update, you don't really notice as a user. But the nice thing at Office 365 is that you are free from devices. Because on the CeBIT in Germany, I show Office 365 with the Android. And it works perfect. It works really perfect. And it was funny because the people who make the apps for the iPad, for the SharePoint Lite, they do it also for the Android. And they are really, really good. I love my SharePoint on my iPad. It's so cute. It's so smart. You can really use it sometimes much better as in the web browser.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the good thing is that we're beginning to see, like, Colligo, which is a major SharePoint vendor, a third-party vendor, is now releasing apps for the iPad, you know, aimed at the enterprise and allowing you to download, view your documents and edit them offline.
Yeah.
So again, I think there are already a number of apps out there. They're Office 365 aware. So again, you're getting this seamless integration with the information, and for most customers, they don't care where the information is, and storing it in something like Office 365, like you said, is much easier for them to access remotely, because all they have to do is punch in the address into the app, click that it's Office 365, and then all the rest is handled. Trying to do that with on-site applications, you know, putting holes through firewalls and double-checking this and clicking this, is a lot of work. So again, it is making it much easier for these sort of people to get to their data, I think, than they ever did before.
So, and people use it.
Yeah, exactly. I think so. So now the other thing that comes with SharePoint Online is the ability to create a public SharePoint site. So typically you have an internal, an intranet, a team site, which you collaborate on using your documents, your private documents, just as you would a file server or a file share. However, Office 365 gives you the ability to have a public-facing SharePoint site.
Yeah.
How are you finding that? Are you finding people are using it? Are you looking to tell customers about it and use that? What's your experience with the external SharePoint site?
This is really a great opportunity for the people, because the small customer have not so much budget for the IT and for the website and for social communication. But for example, we said 2007, we do all our sales. We do all only over the internet. And we don't need salespeople. We sell our product, our services only over the internet. And this comes more and more and more, also for small businesses. And the public-facing website is something you can really use and put interesting content in it. The small customer who comes to us normally have no domain. They normally use T-Online or Gmail or whatever, or Hotmail, for their communication with the customer. And then we start and say, okay, first we find a fine domain name for your business. And then you get more professional, because you put the email address, the domain in the email address. And this is makes a totally different view from the customer of the small business, because they said, oh wait, I must, I haven't stopped my phone, sorry.
That's all right.
Okay, it's, no, it's out. and this, they get a view of professionality. If you, for example, I mean, with small businesses, I sometimes mean one man or one woman businesses, and they get really a professional, and they have not much budget. And the second thing we make is we put this domain in the SharePoint, and now they have an internet public-facing website with their name, with their domain name. And people find them because you can put as – I know they are not, that's not professional SEO tools, what SharePoint gives you, but it gives you SEO tools you have inside. You can meta tags, you have your description inside, and it needs a little time, like always in the internet, that the people find you. But when they find you, you have a professional facing website. You can put video inside of this. You can put a contact formula, you say, or
yep. How you contact say? Details.
Formula. Details, yes. You can have a card. The map. Yes.
Ah, yes, a map. Yep.
A map. Totally easy. It's a gadget you put inside, and you have it connected with Bing Maps, and you can, the people can find the ways, and it's totally easy.
I think that you're right. I think that, you know, one of the statistics that I heard from somewhere was that something like, you know, 60% of most small businesses don't even have a website.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, and I didn't believe that. But again, when you do start talking to a lot of businesses, yeah, exactly right. They don't have a domain. They're on some ISP or their telco's, you know, broadband connection using the same, their email, you know, using the telco's email address domain. And in this day and age, and I think this is, again, where a lot of value can be added by the reseller, is you can go in there quickly and easily, get a new domain, tidy it all up, point it to Office 365, have the emails coming in, and then have that small business far more professional by sending emails out with their own domain, having a basic website, like you said. And you know, one of the criticisms that you know, SharePoint is leveled at SharePoint is the fact that it isn't, you know, perhaps a, you know, a fully rendered, flash automated website.
Yeah, okay.
And again, you know, the reality is that, you know, SharePoint is a tool. It covers some broad ground. It can do the website stuff, but is a collaboration tool. However, in a lot of cases, you can do a lot with it. You can, you know, customize it. It does support, you know, putting in raw HTML, like you said, embedding video, embedding maps, embedding standard iframe. All that sort of stuff can be in there. So, admittedly, there are some limitations, but again, as we move forward, those limitations will be reduced. So the difference between nothing and SharePoint, I think, is a really good option that people can get into it really quickly. And the good thing from a partner's point of view is, you know, it doesn't require a huge skill set in HTML or CSS coding to get something in there and get the customer up and running with something that does look professional. And does make them happy.
Mm-hmm. And for example, the area I live, it's a touristic area. We have a lot of small hotels and, pension, I don't know. The smaller things than a hotel.
Bed and breakfast sort of thing, yep.
Yeah, but the sort of bed and breakfast thing, yes. And the funny thing is, in Germany, the people, I don't know the percentage, but the most people look if they travel in internet.
Yep.
They booked it in the internet. And a lot of these small businesses, bed and breakfast and hotels, they don't have a professional site. Sometimes they have a professional site, like an advertising in a big portal, but not more. And then and with this SharePoint, they get really to cheap post. If we take the Office 365 P1 plan, it's nearly nothing what you have to pay for it. And they can use it and make a website and have this contact formula, and they get the questions of the people inside them their mailbox, and they can see them on their smartphone if they because often this bread and breakfast people work. Two, they do this bread and breakfast, but have also a professional work, and they can handle this all over their devices. And that is really, really a big business here in the moment.
Well, I think also too, like I said, a lot of businesses are part of a portal there, you know, but they can't control that. You know, they've got a limited space, and they can say limited things. On their own little website, they can put pictures, they can put their own stories, they can put a blog. They're in control. You know, they can update the website. They don't need to be web designers. You know, a bit of training can get them to making, you know, easy content changes. And like you said, for a lot of people, that's all they want. And I think, again, like I said, if you look at the price, what you're getting in the P plan for starters, you know, an enterprise version of SharePoint with an external facing website that is, you know, basically a content management system that you can manage, is very, very powerful and shouldn't be overlooked. And from the reseller's point of view is, again, you know, there's so much opportunity to go in there and help the business build something. Yeah. And the other thing that I've seen is most resellers are very scared of SharePoint. Typically what they do is they migrate the documents or copy the documents into SharePoint, and then they run away and never want to do any more. The reality with SharePoint is it's sort of an open-ended project. There's just so much you can do. You can start off with basic document management, and then you can start doing you know, lists and libraries and connections to calendars. But then you can design web pages, and then you can get into workflows. So you can automate their processes. And again, there's so much opportunity in that one product for so many customers. But again, it's interesting that so many people, traditional resellers, I say, I seem to be so scared about, you know, getting in and learning a bit of SharePoint, which is great for me. It just means more business. I have no problem with that. But again, I think, you know, you've got to really look into SharePoint a bit deeper to find out that, yeah, look, it really is a huge product. And, you know, when the new release comes out, when Office 365 upgrades to the next version of SharePoint, you know, within 6 months or so, you're going to get a whole new swag of features coming out without having to do any installation. So I think it's a great opportunity.
Yeah. And that's a thing I don't understand in the German partner area, what you said. A lot of partners are really scared. And what we see is that we all our new customers we have get. We do the public cloud and we do the private cloud, I must say. We also have a lot of customers on the private cloud who come to us. But if we look at only at the public cloud, all the new customers we have become, they are really new for us. I have never contact to them. They are all around in Germany. They are in the south, they are in the north, and we are sitting in the middle. So I get a lot of customers who have been before to other partners, but they say these partners don't do Office 365, so they come to us. And they come with their other questions also to us because they find it good what we make. We do a lot of things for free. We say, okay, you can decide what you want to make with us and what you want to do alone. We make trainings if they prefer this things. And we notice that they all come and say, okay, perfect. We start with SharePoint only with document sharing, and then they come the next time, the next year, they have a little bit more budget and they say, okay, now I want to do this with SharePoint. And so we have all this customer we win from the beginning, 2009, we still have. They don't change. And this is a business we have also for the future time, because SharePoint get much more possibilities. We are the partners and we do the business then.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that, you know, email's email. There is a limited amount of what you can do around email and a limited amount of functionality. Yeah. I think the big advantage with SharePoint is it's more a development tool. And again, it's more something you can put your own knowledge into and basically sell that. And again, I think another thing that resellers probably aren't aware of is that if you develop a solution or some sort of product in SharePoint, you can generally template that, copy it out as a template, and put it into the next SharePoint. So if you come up with a vertical for accountants or lawyers or doctors, you can then template that and then take that to the next one, the next one, the next one. So you only need to develop once, and you can then reuse multiple times. And again, I think that's, again, part of the fact that, people need to, resellers need to spend a little bit of time understanding SharePoint. And the final thing I suppose I would point out with that SharePoint is this: the skills that you learn with Office 365 SharePoint are generally also going to be applied to on-site SharePoint, so SBS, standalone. So again, you're not limiting yourself just to working in the cloud. If you do take the time and learn a bit of SharePoint, you're going to be able to walk into just about any installation and say, look, if you've got SharePoint, I can help you. I can sell you some solution and some time. So I think that's a big opportunity.
And I don't know how it is in Australia, but in Germany, we have a shortage of people who are really good in SharePoint. And if you normally put SharePoint as projects out of the cloud version, you have to pay a lot of money for these people. They are really expensive people. If you can do how you said it with templates, you can develop it and sell it more often, so you can do it cheaper for the people.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's, again, you've got to know the tool and be very smart. But as you mentioned initially, people don't seem to understand that SharePoint is generally an extension of Office. You know, it works with OneNote, it works with Word, it works with Excel. You can use it as a pure web interface, but you can use it on your iPad. You can use it directly from Word. You could map a drive to it and open and close documents. Again, there is just so much in that product that most people just think, oh, it's just for storing documents. It's just like SkyDrive, or it's just like, you know, Dropbox. Well, no, it's actually a huge amount more than that. And again, if you get the enterprise plans, the upmarket versions of Office 365 with the enhanced SharePoint, you're getting form services, so you can create, you know, paperless offices. You get access services, you get Visio services, you get My Sites, which is a bit like a corporate Facebook or a LinkedIn. Again, all those features that used to have to pay thousands of dollars for an enterprise version of SharePoint, you're getting for a few dollars per month per user. Yeah. So, you know, the potential's huge.
For example, I use Office 365 P1 plan privately because I have a hobby. I'm writing ebooks, romances, not technical ebooks. And I have write it in my free time. And last year I start and say, okay, because Amazon do it in Germany, I can publish the ebooks for myself and say, okay, I do Office 365 P1, make a website, use a web address especially for this businesses, for this hobby. And it's so great because when I lecture my first ebook, I send it per email. Yeah, okay. And I send the version, the editor, not lecturer, editor is the name in English. The editor send it back to me, and then we send again and again. And you have a lot of versions about this ebook. And what happens? The last one third of the ebook, he uses the wrong version, and he have to do it again. And now we do it over Office 365 with SharePoint, and it's great because we have to talk. He lives in Hamburg. Mm-hmm. Hamburg, you? Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Yep, Hamburg.
And,
yep.
And I live in the middle. There are 400 kilometers between us, and we do it all over the phone. So we do it with SharePoint, and there's the great function of co-authoring. Yeah.
Yep.
He has a Word document. I have the Word document, and he shows me what he mean and where he want to change, and I can do it. And we have the same version. We know we work both at the same version, and this co-authoring is really a great possibility.
I think you're right, and I think that, you know, that's where the power is. When you incorporate it with the latest version of Office, the product that I always point out that makes a huge difference, that most people, again, aren't aware of, is OneNote. So OneNote allows you to do, freeform notes on your desktop, retain a local copy on your machine, but sync it to SharePoint in the cloud. And then if you open OneNote and connect to that notebook on another machine, you will then sync the copy to that machine, and now you've got two copies. So again, I use OneNote, have it open all the time in my office PC. If I go out on the road, I can get to it on my mobile device. I can get to it on a remote laptop.
Yeah.
I've always got it up to date. And again, it just, rather than spending all this time writing down notes and wondering where it is, once it's in OneNote, it's backed up to SharePoint. And guess what? The biggest advantage is it's all searchable. I need to find that one name, one address, I do a search, and there it is. And that's what a lot of businesses haven't got the ability. They can't search their data. And to me, that's the killer app for SharePoint is, you know, it's the internal search engine for their data, which they've never had before.
Yeah, that's a really good. And OneNote is one of the most overseen product. I can't understand if it would be a product from Apple would spread it as the huge new software. And OneNote is, I don't know how much people know it in Germany. And it is really, really one of the best products I love most.
No, I agree with you. And I think that the good thing is Microsoft now include it with every version of Office 2010. Yeah. So hopefully I think it's picking up, obviously, in popularity. It's also now available on the iPad as a native app. Admittedly, it only syncs to SkyDrive, but you would see in the future it will sync to Office 365. So, again, I think that's when that does mature a little bit more, it's going to be such a killer application. So, again, that's another application that I would tell people and resellers to get into, learn it, and then, again, help your customers, because every customer that I've ever seen can always use a digital notebook.
And you can collect your information in, for example, I'm a person who changes nearly every year how I organize my information, because I notice, oh no, that doesn't work for me. I need it organized in a different way. And you can do it so easily in OneNote. In former times, when I have a paper notebook, I cannot change it. I lose everything then. But with OneNote, you can change it. You can say, okay, no, I do it like in the project version, or no, now I do it how I work. You can change it every time.
Yeah, I think that's great. So, like I said, unfortunately, I think we could spend all day talking about SharePoint and OneNote. We will need to wrap up. So, what I'll get you to do, Kirsten, is just if you want to let everybody know how they can get in contact with you if they have questions, or, you know, visit and look at some of the information that you do. Obviously, it's in German, so they'll be able to learn to speak another language as well. But I think, again, you know, pictures tell a thousand words. So, again, just if you want to let everybody know how they can access your information, that'd be great.
Yeah. I think it's funny because we see our videos. We do it only in Germany, and we have talked a lot of times if we put it in English. But we said, no, it's for the German people, for the German partners and customers. But a lot of visitors come to our website, and what you said, because they don't understand what we talk, but they see what we do. And, for example, the connection from iPad to Exchange, it's looked more than 3,000 times. And a lot of people from the English-speaking areas are looking them too. So you can find us in the internet. I don't know how. I can only talk in German, this website. It's himmlische-it.de. We have we have also the domain heaven-it.de. But I don't know if our coworkers have we have start with this, because a lot of people who come to us on the fair tell, oh, I know your website, and they translate it from Himmlische to heaven. And so we decided to buy this domain, and we will connect that if somebody type in the internet www.heaven/it.de, that they also find us.
All right, well, that makes it easy. What I'll do is I'll get those domains from you in an email, and then I'll make sure they go up on the post for this podcast so that if people do want to access it, they can visit the website where the podcast is located, and they'll be able to click on that, and you'll be able to get some more links, hopefully.
Yeah, I think this would be easier for them.
No, that's fine. That's great. So I'll take this opportunity now to thank Kirsten for her time, and obviously allow her to get on with her day. I think there's been a lot of great information there for resellers and partners as well. We've all covered some stuff that we're probably not, again, 100% familiar with. The legal hold stuff, again, I'd just make sure that if you want the full details that you go to the internet and do a full search just to make sure that it is exactly what you're looking for. But I think, you know, the information we've covered about the opportunity, especially around SharePoint, again, I think is something that, again, resellers and many of the people using Office 365 will get benefit out of. So I, again, thank Kirsten for her time, and thank everybody for listening to the Need to Know podcast. Keep tuning in for new episodes soon.
Yes. Thanks, Robert, for the invitation, and for all the Australian people, good night.
Good night. Thank you very much, everybody.
Yeah, bye.
This podcast has been brought to you by the SharePoint Operations Guide. For more information, visit www.wssops.com. To provide feedback on this podcast, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.